I'm Virginie Selavi, and you're listening to Panel Borders, which is an extract from Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. In this podcast, I'm talking to Marjane Satrapi about her film Persepolis and the original graphic novel that it's based on.
Yes, so the film is an adaptation of both the Persepolis books, the first one about your childhood in Iran, the second one about your adolescence and your time in Austria. It seemed to me very important that you adapted both books in the film because they seem to be like two sides of the same story. They seem to be very complementary. Was that important to you?
Oh yes, absolutely. I mean, I didn't want to make a movie with a sequel. Like it would be this Persepolis one, and then it's Rocky one, Rocky two. Which I like Rocky one actually, but not the Rocky two. Normally, a sequel is always bad. No, it was very important, to just make it in all, because this is also the story of one person life. The pivot. How do they say the pivot?
The turning point.
Yeah, the turning point of the story is the exile. So, it's another construction than the book, because, this book is very linear. It starts, at 78, it stops at 94. You have this chapter that go in the time. Here is, since, the turning point is the exile, is a nostalgic point of view, is a point of view of somebody who goes, into the airport, who cannot go back, and she sits and she makes a revision over her whole life with, all these things that she comes back and she goes, etc., etc. So, yeah, that was very important to put all of that in one.
Yeah, and yes, I mean, it is structured in a different way because it's a flashback kind
yes,
of construction
absolutely.
In the film. So why did you decide to do it this way, with this nostalgic point of view rather than linear point of view?
Because at the time I was making the script, I was extremely nostalgic, because that was a point of my life that I was extremely nostalgic. It started really to weigh on me, the fact that, I didn't go back to Iran and all of that. So, and of course, if today I made the movie, it would be another movie again, because now I'm not nostalgic anymore. But at the time I was extremely, extremely nostalgic, yeah.
And your life...
And, excuse me, and also, with making this structure, with flashback, it also shows that, I have taken even more distance with the story, than the book, in which I explain, I already have taken some distance to be able to laugh at myself, etc., etc. But with the structure of the movie, you understand that is also another time,
Okay. And your life has been shaped by momentous political events, and it seems to be inseparable from the life of your country. So it makes reading or watching your autobiography a much more interesting experience than reading most people's autobiographies.
But that is in that sense that I don't like, the word autobiography for my own work, because normally autobiography is a book that you make because you have problems with your family and friends and you don't know how to tell them this problem, so you make a book and you make your revenge. If I have problem with people, if I care about them, I say it to them. If I don't care about them, I just don't talk to them anymore, and that's it. If I use myself to talk about that, it's not so much as I talk about myself. I talk about all the rest, from my point of view, because, I didn't want to make a kind of political or historical or sociological statement, because I'm not a politician and I'm not a historian, I'm not a sociologist. I'm one person who is born in a certain place in a certain time. It's a very personal point of view, and I think that is why also it had become universal, because the only point of view that can eventually become universal is, of course, the personal point of view, is one person point of view. But, this is my French side, that is my very individualistic side, certainly, most certainly.
It's a very interesting point of view, especially in these times where the Western world and the Muslim world have become very polarized, completely opposed and simplified by the politicians. So your point of view is very interesting, because it's that of the outsider, in a way, both on the Western world and on Iran as well.
It seems to me like, when I was a child, I always had lots of doubt about these people who were believing in astrology. I was like, is it possible to believe that, you have 12 group of human beings? Of course not, Iran. So now it's even not 12 group, it's two groups. It's Muslim and Christian, West and East. I mean, is that because you're French, that you love all the French, that all of them, they're friendly to you and you understand all of them? It's not necessary even to come from the same city, even from the same district, even from the same building, to be friend with people. it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's just a question of human being. I mean, you know, what is, for example, the common point between me and a fanatic of my country? None. What is the common point between an American liberal and George Bush? None. What are the common point between a fanatic of my country and George Bush? A lot. So it's not a question of where you come from. It's simplified and it's stupid because it leads to the kind of war and the situation that they even exist, because, you know, the basis is just bullshit. It doesn't exist. So if there is one division between the world, but the world is divided between the fanatics and the rest of the people, and the fanatics, they're absolutely universal. The stupid fanatic man is everywhere. You have them in France, you have them in Iran, you have them in America, you have them in England, everywhere you have them. And the way that they think is exactly the same everywhere. The fanatic people, the reason they are more powerful than the rest of us is that they push on the button of emotion. You know, they use the emotion of the people. They abuse of the emotion of the people, and they let the people in the street, and they let them do whatever they want. What me or you try to do is to ask questions. So you are asking the people to think, to use their logic. So they have to make, and of course the procedure is much longer, and it doesn't have the immediate effect that the emotion has. That's why you hear them much more than us, but we are much more. In number, we are much more. And we have to know that. So if we consider that, and we realize that the whole world who are not fanatic, we have to be united between us, because these people, they are going to kill all of us. I mean, if they are, you know, with bow tie and very well shaved or with beer, these people, they are very dangerous to the whole humanity. So we have to be aware of that.
Mm. Mm. And in the second part of the book, you say that you felt you didn't belong anywhere when you went back to Iran. Is that something you still have, that feeling of not belonging anywhere? Because you've lived in France for many years now.
Yes. Well, I belong to nowhere and I belong to everywhere at the same time. You know, it's not a very inconvenient situation, because, you know, anywhere in the world, you know, if you give me a hotel room, you know, I have a little suitcase, I have a comfortable hotel room and a bathtub. You know, the shower is not enough. But if I have a bathtub, I feel at home completely. Like, you know, the day after, the problem of the city or my problem, I'm very concerned about everything. So it makes it easy, but at the same time, yeah, you know, the place that you are born, you have something, you know, even if, you know, whatever, you have something absolutely evident, definitive. You have a relationship with this place yet, but that we don't have with any other place. Because I don't know, it's kind of the genetical memory or something like that is there. And that is something that you can never change. You know, I always say that, you know, if I was a man, I would say, you know, that Iran is my mother and France is my wife. You know, like my mother, she can be hysterical, she can make me, like, you know, the emotional blackmailing, whatever. She's my mother. I only have one, and I cannot pretend she's not my mother, because she is. My wife, of course, I have chosen her myself, and I enjoy very much living with her. But, you know, I can cheat on her, I can, you know, leave her, we can divorce, I can make another baby with another woman, etc. So, you know, it's about the choice, but you don't have this immediate thing. And at the same time, I am very French, so, you know, I am very French, and, you know, I mean, for the Iranian, I'm very French, and for the French, I'm very Iranian, so...
What did you hope to achieve when you started writing the book?
The only thing I wanted was that the people would ask themselves a question. Mm-hmm. Like these people that we are very scared of, these people that are reduced, you know, to abstract notion. These people we don't know anything about. And anytime, any press, any radio, they talk about them. They just talk about fanatics and bad people. These people, are they really like us? And if the answer is yes, then maybe we have to think about, you know, the whole disposition in the world. That is the only thing. You know, as an artist, you know, I think one should stay humble to you know, to the changes that we can make in the world. You know, like Marilyn Manson was saying when they accused him, you know, of, you know, making the kids satanist. You know, they say if song music could change anything, the whole world should be love, because 99% of the songs are about love. You know, it doesn't change so much. So But we try.
Yeah. And the medium of the comic book may seem like a strange choice for a book that is about very complex political issues and all that, and traditionally it's not associated to being able to explore those issues in depth. Why did you choose that medium?
No, I read The Mouse of R. Spiegelman, and I really understood that it was just a media like another. Mm-hmm. I mean, traditionally is not used because people, they had a problem with the drawing, because most of the kids, they stop drawing at the age of 10. For 99% of the people, drawing belongs to the childhood. Plus, in the educational system, very soon, what did the poet say and what did the author say? But you never know what was the painter say or the illustrator say. We don't know how to judge, what is a good drawing and what is not a good drawing. We don't have the tool. So since we are scared to talk about the drawing also, we just don't want to touch it. So for that, I do understand that for, people can think that comic, is odd, but it's just a media like any other, and it's a media with lots of possibilities, especially because since people, they thought that's a media that you cannot do a lot, it's like Far West, you can just go for it, you can do a lots of different things. And actually, the use of the image and the sequences and the frame and this thing gives you a freedom that, I don't have it when I write, When I want to describe a feeling, I just need a drawing, I don't need pages and pages and pages, of words.
Visually, it's very cute, but at the same time, you talk about very dark subject matter, and this contrast is, I think, very powerful.
It should be. I mean, if all go in the same direction, it becomes redundant. So, never two things they should look, the way they are, I was a very, I was a complete psycho, and that's why I have decided that I have to be dressed like a bourgeois, because if I get dressed the way psycho I am, then I cannot go anywhere.
So was it a conscious decision to draw it in that particular time?
Absolutely. Especially that in a comics, the drawing are part of the narration. It's not illustration for the text. And that means that whatever you don't write, you draw, and vice versa. So going from this point, since in the comics I had lots of text, it was, very, it had lots of words, the story was complicated. So I couldn't make a very complicated drawing neither, because then it becomes too much. It's a question of rhythm. So, if the drawing is more complicated, the eyes stay over the drawing much more, for a longer time, etc., etc. So with this kind of a story, I had to purify the style of the drawing the most possible.
Were you influenced by the work of other graphic novelists when you started drawing?
Not so much, because I don't come from a culture of comic. I mean, after I made my comics, I started reading comics, but not before. So, at the same time, saying I don't have any influence is too pretentious and is even not true. But they don't particularly come from comics. It comes from, the woodwork of Félix Vallotton. They come, from the painting of Matisse. They come from Flaubert. They come from, from music, from cinema, from a lot of different things. So, of course, I'm the result of whatever I have experienced, whatever I have loved, whatever I have seen. But, particularly comics, no.
Mm-hmm. And why did you decide to turn the comic books into a film?
It's the worst idea in the world to make a film out of your comic books. You cannot make worse than that. I didn't decide to. That was a situation where I could actually make a movie. And then I said, okay, let's make it, without knowing actually what I was going to do. So it was like diving into the water with Vincent. And once we were in the water, we were like, we don't know how to swim. Shit, now we have to learn how to swim. But, in the artistic work, we should forget, the enjoyment side of it, Suddenly we had the right to play with this big toy, a movie that we didn't know how to play with it. And we just said yes like that without knowing. And okay, now, we like the result of the movie. So I can invent you 1,200 good reasons to have done it. But, I just felt like doing it. Now I'm happy I have done it, but it was not a good idea.
Yeah. Were there any particular difficulties involved in adapting the comic book as a film?
Yeah, the most difficult part, that is the scene of the family. That is this useless scene that, they're absolutely useless. And without them, you don't have any movie. Because then it becomes a patchwork of very hectic moment. And you need actually this useless moment to make the whole story. It's like the cement of the whole story. So I mean, when it's in the living room with the whole family and they're doing nothing, how to make it attractive, how to make it, you know, that it won't become boring when she speaks to her grandmother, you know, to change, you know, the angle of the camera to make it more dynamic. It was all this kind of thing that we had to think about. So that was the most difficult. Because the hectic scene or the thing that are, you know, that you see, they're not so difficult to make. They're the easiest actually. Because, you know, you need a little bit, you know, to know how to deal with the images and the music, etc., etc. Then it works. But, you know, this is this moment that nothing happened. These are the worst. But the most exciting also.
Visually, there was a difference between the comic book and the film. And it seemed that you were able to use some effects, like a kind of charcoal background.
Yes.
And lighting to give a more, in the darker scenes, to give a more kind of sinister atmosphere.
But you know,
what
we kept from the comic was on the character, black and white, and the characters, we kept them the way they were. But you know, you cannot make a 1.5 hour movie completing in black and white, because either you make the people blind or you provoke an epileptic crisis because you know it's unbearable. I mean, in a 5 minute movie, 10 minute movie, it's fine, but one hour and 35 minutes is just unbearable. So we had to find, you know, those grays. So we worked on a lot. We changed a lot. I mean, until the end, we were working them. It was necessary. It was not possible without this grace.
It was good because it introduced an element of nuance in
absolutely
the black and white.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And you know, it is not good only black and white.
Yeah.
I mean, then it would be like, you know, like the Danish dogmatism. You know, I mean, we are not here to make people pay. You know, not only people, they have paid their price, but if they have to throw up and the movie is finished, this is not the point.
Yeah, but it is great that you kept it in black and white, because I think
yes,
very part of
absolutely
the identity.
It is, and also, you know, Anne Vincent and me, we both of us, we come from the independent, you know, the comic scene in France, and you know, we have always worked here in black and white. I mean, it was even not a choice, it was just obvious that it would be in black. I mean, in which color was it possible to make it?
And obviously, because it's two books into one film, you can make a 5 hour film. So you had to.
Well, if that was another time of life and my name was Erich von Stroheim, I would have made this 8 hour movie.
Yeah.
But nowadays, nobody wants to pay for that, and
yeah,
nobody wants to go and watch it.
Well,
I personally, since I'm a very obsessional person, I love, you know, to watch an 8 hour movie. You know, these are the things that I really enjoy doing. But
it must have been very difficult for you to limit what you,
yeah,
material that could go into the film, and to get rid of some scenes.
So then you have to go to the essential point. You cannot just, you know, muck around and walk around and, you know, joke around and take your time to say the things. Then you have to be efficient, effective. So then you have to all the time think about alternative way of doing this stuff, which makes it also very, you know, it's also extremely exciting to work this way, because then you all the time have to think about ways of doing this stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite scenes in the book is when, well, your character goes to see Kia, the
yes,
childhood friend who's been horribly injured
yes,
in the war, and he tells her this really tasteless joke.
Yes.
And she doesn't know whether to laugh or not to laugh to start with, and then she understands that you just have to laugh when it's,
yes,
it's this bad. And I thought that was a brilliant scene. And in the film, it's truncated, because I suppose you didn't have time to.
Yes, we tried to put it, but it was impossible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that was, for example, one of the typical moments. But you know, then you go in another direction. I mean, in the movie, you know, the problem in the movie is that you have to have one line and then you have to follow this line. You know, it's always the difference, you know. I say, you know, for example, one bad movie is The Gangs of New York. Why? Because they want, you know, he wants to treat, you know, the love story and the revolt story and all these different gangs and the so going in many directions. So at the end, you know, it doesn't work,
mm-hmm,
because, you know, you're like, what is the story? In another hand, you have Jean-Jacques Annaud, who makes, you know, The Name of the Rose. So of course the book of Umberto Eco is much more on the philosophy and the whole history, you know, of, you know, the church in the Middle Ages, etc., etc. where he was extremely intelligent, is that he put that in the background and he took, you know, the detective thing. So, and that's why the movie works perfectly, because, you know, he just said, okay, now it's going to be an enquête policière, and so we will have the philosophy in the background. So this movie works because it doesn't go in all the direction. So we put in, you know, the whole movie, we put it, you know, on the exile point. So then you don't have the possibilities to tell all these stories, you know. So then, like that, you know, people, they will also buy the book, and like that, you know, they will read the other jokes too.
Definitely, yeah. Why did you choose to write it in French rather than Persian?
Well, listen, you know, this was the book that I really wrote for the other ones, because, you know, that was my answer, you know, to the word, that this is really not the way you think. And you see it in the structure of the book, because, you know, it's I give too much explanation, like, oh, what is this, and what is the new year, and what is the nuptial chamber, etc. I mean, if I wrote this book for the Iranian, I even didn't need to, you know, to explain all of that, because they know about it. So in order to write for somebody, you know, for the others, you know, the language is not just, you know, words that comes out of our mouths. We talk the way we think. So in order to be able to think how the other one will conceive my story, I have to think in his language, not in mine. It wouldn't be possible. You know, I had to write it in French because I was writing it for the French. I couldn't write it, you know, in another language.
Yeah.
And that it's also, this is, you know, the philosophical side of it. That it's also something else is that, you know, I have always studied in French school. So, you know, French literature, I'm better at it than Persian literature. For me, writing in French is easier, actually.
Yeah.
Especially that the spoken Persian and the written Persian, they're extremely difficult, different. And there are a few, you know, writers that know how to deal with that perfectly, but I don't know how to deal with it because I have never, you know, I always wrote in French, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
And I love the French language, too. It's, you know, I've always loved it.
There's one part of your story that I don't understand, in the sense that it seems to me to be completely at odds with what we've seen of your personality. It's the bit where you become an aerobics instructor. What happened?
I was stupid. I don't know what happened in my, you know, the once in a while you may, you know, that is called historical mistake. This is one of the mistakes. I don't understand it neither. When I had photos, you know, like I'm dressed in pink, you know, and purple with a band in my hair. It's, you know, I'm like, what was it in my mind at the moment that I did it, you know? But, you know, many things like that happened. Like, you know, when I was, you know, adolescent, I had this haircut, and, you know, you look at the photo and you're like, what was I thinking when I made that? I don't have any explanation either. I'm very surprised by myself too.
Okay, thank you very much.
Eh ben, merci beaucoup.
On the 29th of April at the ICA in London, there is a screening and performance from Paquito Bolino of France's Le Dernier Cri Publishing House, a series of short animated films created by 30 artists. Les religions sauvages devours the rotting meat of our civilization, regurgitating it in a relentless bombardment of imagery, which will, according to its creators, purge, cleanse, and purify our jaded pornographic imaginations. Bolino will be joining UK artists in a live improvised sound performance to accompany a DVD projection of the film.
If you'd like to know more about this episode and download previous podcasts, please visit www.panelborders.com.